Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wolves Fancast. It's Tuesday. You know what that means. We are here to talk about the game against Manchester United, the 0-1. That's the wrong way around, but there we go. Defeat to Man United. I'm joined by Adam, I'm joined by Stu, and I'm joined by Luke. Hello, gents.
You're right, Mike.
Hello there. I wish it was a 0-1.
I wish it was a 0-1 as well, to be fair. But we are here to thrash it out, as is our duty to you guys. So, first of all, mad hoopla around the changes of the game. Echoes of a Manchester United game many years ago when I think it was my friend had texted me going, why is George Friend playing against Manchester United? What were your initial thoughts when you saw the lineup? Was it to be expected in terms of the frequency of games, or with such a young squad, should we be able to manage that kind of game, you know, that kind of frequency of games?
I mean, I was at that travesty, the Greg Halford game, and I think we spent 42 quid to go there as well, which wasn't ideal. But yeah, it never really crossed my mind, because it's just Nuno and his mad ways. He just does things that you never expect, and this was kind of one of them. It's more like a hoover than a hoopla. But I think it was just the sheer amount of changes that shocked us more than anything else, because he doesn't tend to do that often. And Kilman in the back line, and the same back three as was at Burnley, and it was an absolute disaster. It wasn't very very exciting, was it, to be honest? And then you got two inexperienced wing backs, no striker, and a kid making his debut in attacking midfield. So I wasn't overly positive, let's put it that way.
I was, I guess I wasn't that surprised to be, partially anyway, in so much that we saw it before, where when you play twice as quickly as we do over the festive period, you do tend to see a few changes. So I was expecting the odd one or two. We've tried this no striker approach recently before to varying degrees of success. So that I guess that wasn't a massive surprise. I guess I was a bit surprised with Semedo not playing, because we've all talked about how well he played against Spurs.
Yeah.
So that was a big one for me. Marcel dropping out was kind of expected, because I think he had a bit of a knock, didn't he, against Spurs, and let's face it, he's not the most fit of players anyway. He seems to be a bit of paper mache legs at the minute. But yeah, the one thing that was a bit of a shock was how the defence all switched around. And that wasn't immediately evident until the game kicked off. I had assumed, like many, after looking at the Twitter lineups, that Kilman was going to be on the right of a three. So I thought, you know, here we go. That could potentially be a bit of a... And I rate Kilman, but I thought, you know, I thought that probably could be the weak spot. But as it is, I think we all saw Cody took up that position, which, again, was a bit of a surprise. So, yeah, there's quite a few things that weren't surprising, but then also were. So it's a bit of a mixed bag.
Mm. Luke, I want to ask you, as our resident, at least on this call, tinfoil hat wearer,
in all walks of life,
in all walks of life, not just Wolves. In the build up to the game, there was a conversation around, you know, what do we need in January? Is Nuno ever looking at putting a team out there saying, listen, we need support? Or do you think he's done this as a chance to give game time to people, and actually purely a fatigue point of view?
I don't know why he's done it, to be fair. I really don't know. Looked at the lineup, no Silver again. What's that saying to the kids' confidence? Mm. All right, there's been a 48-hour turnaround, but out of all the players, you'd think Silver would be one of the freshest ones. Being 18 years of age, you'd think they could handle two games in 48 hours. I just think he's dropped a bollock again.
Mm.
We played... Okay, I'm not going to go into the game, but I just think we've gone three games now where we haven't started a striker. And of all those three games, we've had a goal return of zero. And if we've only got one fit senior striker at the club, why is he not playing? If I'm Silva, I'm thinking, well, what do I need to do? We haven't got any strikers, and he would rather play without one than myself. So is it killing the kid's confidence? Who knows? Who knows? Personally, I think it's poor management, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
I was shocked to see Semedo drop to the bench. And like probably everyone else, I didn't expect to see Saez play in the middle of the three at the back.
Did Podence deserve to not start?
I think he's been absolutely fantastic this season, so no. But then you've got the argument, is it the fatigue? But then you come to the argument with the fatigue, and it's these players are earning 60, 70, 80,000 pounds a week. Now, if you want to earn the big money, then you have to get the high demands physically and mentally.
I suppose what we don't know is what's when they've got back after Spurs game, when they get on the training pitch, they just take stock, don't they, of who's out on their arse, who's, you know, who the coaching staff and like the physio team think are ready for the next game. Well, these are things we don't really know, do we? But because obviously the well-worn opinion is, well, when I was a kid, I used to play for 12 hours a day. I used to play till the lights went out and all that shit. But I guess you don't know, do you? We look at the changes and we think.
Pricey, I get that. But in League One and League Two, they play Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday for the majority of the season. They don't get the facilities that they get in the Premier League. They don't get the recovery sort of aftercare that they get in the Premier League. They certainly don't get the finances that they get in the Premier League. So for me, I don't buy the excuse. I really don't buy the excuse. Villa played Chelsea. Now, there might have been more than 48 hours between their game against Palace and Chelsea, but I don't think there was much in it. I don't think they made a change. And if I'm being brutally honest, they went to Stamford Bridge and there's a better team. So I just don't buy into it. And I think it's an excuse that players and managers hide behind. Like, I remember when Everton was in the Europa League and Martinez was the manager and he was moaning about the schedule. Well, if you're moaning about the schedule, don't qualify for the Europa League. Finish ninth in the Prem.
I think in terms of like the defensive line, it was always going to go to a 3/5 in attack and in defence. You know, United, for all that we slag off Solskjaer, and you know, they are unbeaten in 9 in the Premier League and have had a fair few wins within that 9 as well. So I don't think the defence is surprised. The way that the defence lined up might have been a bit of a surprise, and I think it was more out of necessity than choice when it comes to Ait Nouri. But Hoover's a strange one over Semedo, because like you mentioned, we previously said it's probably his best game for Wolves against Spurs, but it is what it is, I guess. I mean, moving on to the game then, pretty much went the first half as expected for me. With no Podence, you expected the chances to come and be created by Neto. And we did have a couple of early chances, and you know, Traore looked quite determined. In the first opening 10-15, were there potential, you know, were there good signs there for you guys that this isn't going to be the absolute shellacking that potentially we might have thought it would be with all the wholesale changes?
I mean, I was surprised how comfortable and composed everyone was, considering that they've had hardly, there's been, what, half a day's training, if that, since the Spurs game. And like we've already said about the sheer amount of turnaround of the team and personnel. I thought they were superbly composed. Mm-hmm. That's what stood out to me. I mean, I thought Hoover just slotted in, like I already mentioned, just like he's played there for years. no fear whatsoever, which you get with young players anyway, but it's normally a bit erratic, like it was with Ait Nouri to start with in certain games. But even in this one, they all looked composed. They knew what their jobs were, and it was trying to pick that moment. And I thought they did it well, especially the first 25 minutes to half hour. I thought, well, we're obviously not going to load the box like Shearer kept saying, oh, they need someone in the middle. Obviously, we're not going to have anyone because we haven't got anyone apart from a kid who's, I know Luke said he's got to earn his wage, but he is a kid who's never played this amount of football in his life, not at this level, and he played against Spurs. And yeah, he might have took him out the firing line because of that miss at the end. You don't know. But on the same thing. He could have been a very Wolves-like performance to wear him down the first half and bring him on and let him have that chance again, which sadly he didn't come. But I thought we started really well, and it was much better than I expected.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I agree massively. I was so impressed with slick passing in the first half and just how composed we were on the ball, as Stu said, with the amount of changes that we've made in the team and switching personnel around. I thought it was just great to see how everyone was on the same page. I can't really remember many times when there was any miscommunications, passes going astray, or just humping it because that's the only option that we had.
Mm.
I thought I was really, really impressed, given all that's gone on, the change of personnel, quick turnaround time. I mean, I thought Moutinho was fantastic. He was really, I'll keep it to the first half for now, but in the first half, I thought Moutinho was brilliant. I thought he was dictating play. It was fantastic. I thought Hoover, it was just accomplished. I'm going to refrain from making any Hoover-related gags because I can't think of any right now. But
we'll suck it up for now.
Yeah, he was sucking up all the dirt on that right wing, but he was fantastic. It's like he'd been playing all season. To be honest, he's great. He's actually, you know, put himself forward now as a genuine contender. If Semedo ever has a dip in form, or if people start, you know, saying this shit again, then Hoover's like a viable candidate. It's not just a body that can play right, you know, that position. He's actually like a good big competition for him. And Traore, I thought, in the first half was really worrying them. He was playing the way we know he can. He was taking on players, actually being direct and running at them, taking the ball past a couple, like two or three players at a time. And okay, again, there was ultimately no end product from him, but it was an improvement from him. I thought he was a real danger man for us.
Yeah, Luke, any further advance on that in regards to the way that we played? I mean, one question I want to ask everybody, but I'll ask you, Luke, first of all. Bearing in mind how slow and plodding Man United were in that first half, did we have the right attacking mentality, do you think, in that first half? We had the better of the chances. Were you happy in the way that we attacked, or do you think that we were conscious that United do have a ridiculous amount of quality on the pitch at the time?
I think personally, we managed the first half really well.
Yeah.
It was even. And if you can go to Old Trafford against Man United, who are in the form that we've mentioned earlier, then you're doing a good job. You know, as much as Man United might have fallen over the last half a decade or whatever, they're still a massive club and a half-decent team. So I think as well, when you factor in that it was our youngest team since 2012 in the Premier League, we managed the first half really, really well. Now, I'm not sure if you want to get onto the second half just yet, but there is a strong point in the second half that I do want to raise. But whilst we're still talking on the first half, yeah, we coped well. It was an even game. You know, I don't think... if anything, we look more dangerous on the break than Manchester United.
Definitely.
So I think the game management for the first half was spot on and zero complaints. Now, if I'm allowed to sort of digress into the second half.
Go for it.
This is where I think we majorly got it wrong. So the second half started in, to be fair, I felt we was on top those first 15, 20 minutes of the second half. And I thought we looked dangerous. I think there was a few times where we was advancing into the final third, but you could see there was nothing in the box. Mm-hmm. We'll go back to that word, focal point. Well, two words. Focal point. There was none. Absolutely none. And I was screaming. Well, I wasn't screaming at the telly because I was quite chill tonight. But I was like, this is where we're sort of on top now. Go 4-2-3-1. If Nuno's got any bollocks about him, he will take off Kilman for Silva and he'll go 4-2-3-1. Because I think if we just had that extra presence in the box and in the final third, we would have started to cause them a lot more damage. Mm. But we didn't. And he brought off Neto and he kept the shape. And then we just invited the pressure on for the last 15, 20 minutes. Where, if we're being brutally honest, and I think even Man United fans would agree with this, they were there to be got at. especially in that period from sort of minute 50 to sort of 60, maybe 65, they was there to be got at.
Yeah,
there was, I'm not going to say they was on the ropes, but they was certainly on the back foot, and we was on the front foot. But to me, that's where it shows that Nuno hasn't got the bollocks. He plays it too safe. We was unfortunate with the goal because it was a little bit of a mistake from Kilman, but I'm not going to put too much on him. But sometimes you say, maybe we deserved it for not showing a bit of just fucking cojones.
I know what you mean, Luke. I'm in your camp when it comes to your final statement there, but we'll move on to that a bit later on. There was a point in the first half, actually, when Neves played like a delicious ball in, the Neves of old, you might say. And even I think it might have been Shearer, like, even said, look at Neves there. He's throwing his arms up because no one's got that instinctive killer movement, we need, really. There was a lot of... it's funny, actually, because it's like this Mick McCarthy turn that he gets labelled with all the time. There's a lot of huff and puff there, but not a lot of sizzle and not a lot of steak, really, in that we got ourselves into loads of really good positions, but there's not that, you know, that threat, that final threat to help with that. To your point, though, when the second half started, United obviously ramped up the tempo of the game, and that's when I thought it will be our undoing here, because, really quick passing, I wouldn't call it tick-a-tacker because they're not good enough to be called tick-a-tacker, but these quick passing, and you're getting players like Pogba, giving him space to be able to ping balls all over the place. I thought that'd be our undoing, but up until like minute 85, we soaked it up really well. What do you guys think about, the second half and how we challenged that?
For once, I'm going to go completely against what I've been saying all season long so far, and Nuno bottling it was not an option in this game, because we didn't, apart from Silva, who again is an inexperienced child, who's already shown that he can't head the ball anyway. And apart from putting Otazawi up front just because he's tall, there was no one to bring on. So we haven't got a striker, so we can't play with one. Even if we try and put someone there to do the job, it's just making the best of a ridiculously bad situation that we're in, which again is his fault because he wants only to have Jimenez as a striker in the squad. But I think we, like you just said, Matt, when Pogba actually decided he could be arsed, he was always kind of a bad sign, because he's obviously very talented when he wants to be, and he started to grow into the game. But even that, he was nullified because we kept our shape. If we'd have started bombing on, and if we had bought Silver on and we had gone a bit more adventurous, we would have been picked off earlier. And I think he actually got it spot on. And other than a ridiculous deflection at the end, he would have been justified for going with the gameplay that he went with.
But do you not think it shows and proves that Nuno is playing for the draw?
Yeah.
Because that we would have got picked off, but how do you know we wouldn't have nicked one?
Well, he's naturally playing safe, isn't he? That's in this game, he's naturally decided to do what he normally does. And the fact that first half, he wanted just to keep it tight and then nick something in the second half. I mean, let's face it, we were playing with two wingers up front, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And as we said, that showed, because Traore and Neto drove at United's defence, got into great positions. But then, as we've said, they look up and think, oh yeah, there's no one in the box across to us then, because we're playing with two wingers up front. So there is that. And then obviously when Silva did come in, I agree with what has been said. I thought that's a bit of a shame of taking Neto off, because he's one of our two driving forces, rather than trying twist the shape a little bit to get Silva on. Because we had to have Silva on to have any sort of focal point, as we've said before, because we, as good as we played, and we did play well, when we get into that final third, just having two wingers up front, we're not, the opportunities aren't going to be there, are they?
I mean, the other option is bringing Corbyn out one. he's had no game time whatsoever other than in the other 23s.
Everyone has to make the debut at some point, don't they? And to a degree, Stu, I do understand where you're coming from, and I do agree. But I just think if you play the 5-3-2 or 3-5-2, however you want to term it, for that second half, when you've looked and you've judged and you've gauged the game, you've given yourself sort of
a 90% chance of coming away with a point. Whereas if you do just show a little bit of willingness and you do think, okay, let's go for it now. 4-2-3-1, let's get the focal point up front, get a bit more option bodies in the box. You might heighten your chance of losing the game. So it might go from, say, 20% to 40%. But the chance of winning the game also goes from a 10% chance of winning the game to a 40% chance of winning the game.
And we were defending very well anyway, weren't we? We were defending well against United's attack anyway. You know, they didn't really trouble us much at all. As well, I mean, I know they had like the one chance through Fernandez, and that, but that was in the first half. I just think as the game wore on, they had the more possession, obviously, but I can't think of Patricio being overly troubled other than the Fernandez chance and Pogba having the snapshot from about 20 yards.
Yeah.
We were doing all right, weren't we? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought we were managing them all right.
I just think it would have been nice just to see him take the game to them. Okay, you might say, oh, we're playing Man United away at Old Trafford, but when you actually look and gauge the game, they was there to be beaten tonight. I think we've missed an opportunity. I really do.
I think if he actually had options, then you could criticise him for it.
He's got silver. He spent 35 million on the bastard.
Yeah, but we can't.
So I can't have that excuse that he's got no options. I can't spend 35 million on somebody who is not an option.
But he's only spent. He's been bought in this. He's been bought in now because we won't be able to buy him from January. That's the only reason. And if Jimenez wouldn't have been injured, he would never have even got a kick this season.
We lost today's game because of Brexit.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's his fault again.
You know you're out there if you voted for it. But no, but to be fair, I mean, we say he had no options. Fitness aside, speculative aside, he could have had Podence and Neto starting with Traore as well. Do you know what I mean? That option is there and available to him. It's an option. I mean, Traore, what do you do with a problem like Traore at the minute? Because it's like a Jekyll and Hyde character at the minute. First half, sensational. Well, say sensational, better. Second half, passenger, in my opinion.
It's what I said in the group chat about this. If he really is injured and he's got a foot injury, then don't play him. Just put. If we are resorting to just put our under-23s out and we lose every week, then fine. But don't play people who are not fit. It just doesn't work. It never works. We can all pray for Beckham's foot. That didn't work, did he? So if Traore's got a knackered foot and his shoulders all braced up, then just give him a rest.
We have had.
He looked knackered in the second half.
We have had one of the questions. Since I was talking about Traore, we did have a question come through on the Twitter about him. Saying just from a friend of mine, Paddy, who said just Traore hinder Wolves, and he feels that he's lost his edge since he started baby oiling his arms.
it's a question to ask. I mean, how many times? I think Gully had mentioned it on Twitter. About how much he is a focal point for us. But if that focal point then becomes blunt, are you causing yourself more harm than good by keeping him on the pitch? Do you know what I mean? It's a tough one, really, because, you know, when he's on form, he's absolutely devastating. But I just feel at the minute, what I will say, a positive for Nuno is actually, on the basis of today, I don't think there's many that's undroppable in terms of having protected characteristics. If this was like a HR issue, other than like maybe Cody or bar an injury, or Patricio is probably the only two on the pitch that are undroppable at the minute. We feel like Matinho might be at times, good or bad. Let's have a quick, you know, it wasn't a dreadful performance by any stretch of the imagination. So let's focus on the positives now. Positive club in full force, fully fledged members. Ait Nouri had a fantastic game as far as I was concerned. I think he played really, really assured. And for a career so far at Wolves that has been on and off, I think he had a really, really good performance and deserves some plaudits from us, I think.
He reminded me a bit of Vinagre at Liverpool last season, where he just out of nowhere just turned in an excellent performance. I think Kilman that day as well. And he showed in the Palace game when he scored that he's got something decent about him. But today, I don't know, there was something about it. He just looked more mature. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that came from. I mean, he hurt his little arm as well, and he was kind of hanging off at one point. So God knows what he's done there.
Has he got little arms? Yeah,
well, he's a thin little rake. He makes Blake look buff. But he's he was a very mature performance from him, and he hasn't been completely nunified because he was getting forward and trying to do a few little tricks and get past people on the halfway line, to his detriment in times because he lost possession. But he was still trying, and that's what you want from a wing back. You don't want someone like in Marcel does a job, but he's not going to bomb down the wing, is he? So, and with him out, I've got no issue with Ait Nouri playing, especially against Brighton next week.
Any advances on where we are with Neves at the moment? Is he turned a corner in terms of a few better performances in the last couple of games? Whereas prior to that, I think a lot of people were not calling for his head, but calling for him to be dropped at least. Do we think that Neves has turned a corner in terms of an upward trajectory in his performances?
I think so. I think the last two games have been a hell of a lot better than the previous, you could probably say, 12 or 14. So, I think once you've been on a bad run of form, it's very hard just to sort of be red hot again straight away. So, even if it takes a little while for him to sort of reach those levels again, then so be it. He seems to be getting more involved. He's finding a few more intelligent passes.
I think he's hurt the most, but I think he's one of the players hurt the most by not having Jimenez on the pitch, because actually he hasn't got that in that striker to play those wonder balls, those Hollywood balls to finish off.
Yeah, because he can't dribbling's not his best stat, is it at all?
Dribbling or pace.
absolutely.
I think you're right there with the Jimenez shout though.
And I want to give the final word to Sace as well. Sace baby, he's for a player that was never going to be utilised in the Championship, to now being like consistently churning out performances when relied on, because he's not a fully fledged starter all the time in this campaign. Adam, praise him for me. Summarise for me like what Sace gives us in the team.
Oh, God. I mean, after tonight, I would love Sace anyway, but I could dedicate the whole pod to Sace tonight. I could talk about him for another 40 minutes. I mean, we had this chat, didn't we, in the fabled Fancast group chat during the week about the likes of Sace and Cody, about whether they should still be in the team or not. And I really champion Cody and Sace, to be honest, because I think sometimes I can get unfairly knocked down on their footballing qualities. You know, we talk Cody, we put him to one side for a minute because we don't talk about his leadership style as being undroppable rather than his football quality. But with Sace, I think people should give him a lot more credit than they do, to be honest, because it doesn't matter that we signed someone like Sace in the Championship and we've still got him now. I mean, people say we should move on from him. Well, tell me what he's actually done wrong, the way we should be getting rid of them. He's performing to a fine level. There's no reason to. There's almost like it's almost like people want to get rid of him because they've seen him for three seasons. Now I want to see a new face. I want to get someone else in. That doesn't wash with me. His play. I don't think he's hardly ever put a foot wrong for Wolves. To be honest, he's always been dependable where he's been asked to play. Whether that's in the centre of the park, if he's been asked to fill in that left wing back when, you know, we did a few games early on the season, he's dropped back into central defence today. We've already said briefly that he was in the centre of the three tonight, and it looked like he's played there all his life to a very high standard. Mm-hmm. And not only that, he was probably one of their main goal threats as well. He was getting his head on quite a few corners and crosses. I love him. I rate him. You know, to look at it, if you look watching from the first time, you might think, well, you know, is he doesn't look a strong centre back or doesn't look a fast centre back, but he just reads the game very, very well. Which, again, I don't think people give him that much credit for. And I really champion him, and it dismays me a bit when we're saying, oh, we need to we need to be getting rid of him. I just think, why? I don't, unless someone can really present the business case to me in a PowerPoint presentation, you know, with sounds and animation. I just don't understand the reason why, you know, we're looking to disregard players that are still really useful for us and can do a job for us. And tonight he was our deserved man of the match. I've completely agreed with Shearer. Obviously, he had a bit of a sucker punch when the ball got deflected off him, but for the goal. But I thought he did not put a foot wrong tonight, and I thought it was fantastic.
No, nicely put. Stu, go on.
The way it's going, when Bolly gets back, we might as well just put him up front. he can do everything else.
Yeah.
And he's already shown that he can get his head to balls and a few flick ons. So put Sace up front. But yeah, I mean, seriously though, he was. I think since the Palace sending off when he last season or the year before when he lost his mind, he's been really, really steady since that moment. I think he's kind of, that was his growing up kind of stamp on things, where he, when we always used to joke, our Sace booking 10 plus corners, that's your free 20 quid every week. And he's probably only been booked about 5 times since then.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's just grown into a proper, very, very good Premier League defender.
Mm-hmm.
And in the again, in a new position, in the middle, which is he hasn't even played there for Morocco that I can think of. He's always played on the left-hand side. So, again, absolute fair play to him. Deserving man of the match all round.
Absolutely. Luke, we have to talk about it because it was one of the last kicks of the game as we wrap up the game in itself. The goal we did concede, Kilman ball watching slightly. It is unfortunate with a massive deflection. Give me your thoughts on it. Is it something that we invited on because we invited on so much pressure? Is it massively unlucky? I don't think we deserve to lose. What are your initial thoughts on the goal? And, you know, was it justified in the overall result of the game?
I think it's a mixture of all you just said. Did we invite it on to us? I'm going to say yes, obviously, because I feel so strongly that Kilman should have been the sub for Silva and not Neto, and we should have changed the shape. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say yes, we did invite it on. Was it unfortunate? Majorly. It is a mistake by Kilman, but it's not an error, if that kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bit of bad luck. I think his feet got a bit muddled up and misjudged the flight of the ball slightly. And the second you allow a player like Rashford in behind the defence like that, there's always a high probability that you're going to get punished.
You're asking for trouble, aren't you?
You are asking for trouble. And people can say whatever they like about Rashford. He's a fantastic footballer. Mm-hmm. And you give somebody like Rashford half an opportunity, he will punish you. He proved it tonight. I'm not going to slight Kilman, though, because he had an half-decent game. And it was a bit unfortunate the way it came about. Did we deserve it? 100% not. No way did Man United deserve the 3 points tonight. I'm not even going to say we deserve the 3 points either. A draw was probably the fair result. But
I'd agree with you pretty much spot on there, to be fair. It's one of those. I think there's plenty of positives that I don't think any of us would probably have taken, predicted we'd have taken at the start of the game with a team that we'd have put out. I just think that it's going to be interesting to see what we do against Brighton, really, which is conveniently take us to the break. So after the break, we will talk about the Brighton game and we'll have Twitter Corner, and we are going to have a very brief conversation about the coronavirus and its duty of care to football.
Answer me this. How long have you had that mattress? Because it's looking even lumpier than my lockdown love handles. And while those might be more cuddly, a lumpy mattress is doing nothing for your comfort levels or your sleep. So whatever body you're rocking, put it on a Nectar mattress. Prices start at just $499, and you get $399 in accessories thrown in. That includes a Nectar mattress, mattress protector, cooling pillows and sheet set, a 365-night home trial, and a forever warranty. Go to NectarSleep.com and get hugged.
Hi everyone, Matt from Wolves Fancast here. If you're anything like me, time is of the essence these days. How am I meant to take training with my wonder kids on the managerial football simulation game that I'm not allowed to mention for legal reasons if I'm too busy worrying about my online media presence? Well, that's where our friends at pixelyetimedia.com come in. They're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all of your design needs from websites, brochures and signage to marketing, logo design and branding. So go check them out at pixelyetimedia.com. They'll get you set up quicker than Adama Traore running at a terrified left back. Speaking of which, who's got my baby oil?
Okay guys, welcome back to Wolves Fancast. We're in the second half of the pod now, so we're going to talk about the Brighton game coming up. Brighton, probably the last game I went to, 0-0, one of the worst games of football I've seen live. Not helped by the fact I had a drunk guy behind me, kept falling asleep and falling into me over and over and over his head, like headbutting him in the back of the head. It was awful. Not got high hopes of this being a spectacle in terms of anything that we're ever going to make a DVD about. Brighton lost to Arsenal earlier today. Formation-wise, player-wise, a slight rest in terms of games, you know, days ahead. What are you looking at in terms of a lineup? Do we go now four at the back, as it seems to be, when we're playing a, quote, inverted quote, you know, lesser team? What do you want to see, Ad?
I think you'll probably see... we'll probably revert to type, to be honest. A lot of the players you've seen dropped or rested tonight, we'll probably come back in if we're completely honest. So, I mean, the one question mark would be along the left wing back, because Markel, it depends on how his legs are feeling before the game, whether he actually gets to play or not, because you know, we know how injury prone he is. So we've seen what Aitnori can do tonight. I reckon that, you know, if Markel's not, or Marcel is not, match ready, then Aitnori will step in there. I would imagine, and this is obviously all injury depending, because I don't know how long the likes of Dendonka are out, but you might see a similar midfield to tonight, and then just having Pedence, Neto and Silver up front is what I hope anyway. I agree, matches with Brighton are never classics. Brighton strike me as just a massively dull team anyway. I think I took my boy to that game last season against Brighton, that 0-0. I remember it being a very hot day. And my boy, he was only four at the time, and he fell asleep in my arms on like the half-hour mark. So I had to hold him on my arms for 60 minutes, and he woke up at the 75th minute. Nothing had happened. So I was a bit jealous, actually. He fell asleep.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, I mean... They're a bit of a, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're sometimes a bit of a bogey team as well, aren't they, Brighton? We don't really get much out of them for some strange reason. So, yeah, like you've said, I'm not expecting a classic, probably a tight game, one goal in it. I'm just hoping that we set up correctly to sneak a 1-0.
Stu, do we have to be mindful of the fact that there are some absolute brick shithouses in that Brighton squad, and that will play a much more physical game than United would have played today? So then do we have to have the likes of Marcel on and some of our bigger boys? Otisawi probably would be made for this game, to be, you know, having hosses smashing into each other all game. You know, do we have to be proactive and look at that? Or actually, should we be thinking to ourselves, well, we've got the more skillful technical players here, we should actually flood the game with them and play them off the park?
I think the Burnley game just showed that we can't do anything other than play our own game. Mm-hmm. So he tried to go toe-to-toe the Burnley style against them for the third year running, and for the third year running it failed. Mm-hmm. So I just wouldn't even think about that. And they can't bully us as they used to with VAR and stuff. They can't get away with as much. But I just say go four at the back, just because it's different to the other times against Brighton, where it's always been five. Mm-hmm. Just to mix it up a bit, because them games are absolutely, they are, like we've already said, they are shockingly bad. And it's going to be shit again. We all know it is. But if we are going to get something out of it, then, you know, like Luke said about being proactive today, if there's no excuse whatsoever than going at Brighton, who are like, they're 2 points above the relegation zone at the minute. So, Cadence, Traore, Neto, Silva, 4-2-3-1. Just go and get them. Just do them. And if you want Otazoe in the middle with Moutinho, then fine. Go with that as well. But I think there's no way on earth that we can sit back and try and sneak something on the break against Brighton. That'd be criminal.
Yeah, I'd agree. Luke, I want to pose a scenario to you if I can.
Go for it.
Nuno comes down with a mystery illness. You get a call from a withheld number. You answer it. It's Jeff. And he says, Luke, I'm going to give you 100 grand. But for that 100 grand, you need to guarantee me a win.
Yeah.
What are you doing? How are you guaranteeing a win against Brighton? And who are you putting out? And how are we playing to guarantee that win?
Simple. The tactic is attack down the right. Because if Traore cannot rinse Dan Burns, then I've been a big fan of Traore. If he cannot get the better of Dan Burn on the floor for pace, sell him. Sell him on the 1st of January.
Dan Burn is one of those. He's the tallest fullback in the world.
That would be my fact. That's all I'd do. Attack Dan Burn.
Okay, fair play. And second question, what are you spending the 100 grand on?
Probably fucking copious amounts of cocaine and hookers.
I'm joking. I know a guy. No, to be fair, I think, you know, both Stu and Luke, your points there, I think we have to go at them, because it's not like I can't wait for this to be sound clipped and then used against me, but they're not going to counter attack us if we commit men. I really don't think they will. Do you know what I mean? So I think we have to go at them and not play kind of a tedious possession based game, really. But, you know, the Spurs game, you know, I think a lot of us thought it was a much more improved performance. Tonight, I think it was a much improved performance in certain areas, considering the personnel we had on the pitch. So I am optimistic about this game, but I just know that history can often repeat itself and it will be a bit of a snooze and they will look to kind of frustrate us. And I just hope that doesn't become our undoing. Can I get some predictions around the room for the scores? Luke, I'll start with you. We'll get it in reverse order.
2-0 Wolves.
2-0 Wolves. Stu?
He'll go against completely everything I said and kind of stink the place out to get maybe 1-0. Hopefully.
So the good guys, I hope, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Ad?
Yeah, I'm still very positive. It's not going to be a classic, as we've said, but I think we've got the quality to get the better of them, albeit in a tight game. So 1-0 win to the Wolves.
I think we'll score two. I think it'll be a 2-0. I don't think Brighton will score, but I think it'll be 2-0. But that all depends on if the game goes ahead. Now, I'm not saying the game will go ahead because of anything Wolves-Brighton related, but obviously we've already had a game or two postponed now for coronavirus. Is the fear there that this is going to be a repeat? Is the league going to be paused? And actually, with cases on the rise, with everything that's going on, going into a winter period, does football have a duty of care to its players and to the game to actually put a stop now while things are in relative control?
I honestly believe I can get rid of coronavirus in football tomorrow. So a cases of coronavirus on the rise in football, or are deaths of coronavirus on the rise in football? If it's cases, stop testing them. Then there'll be no cases, and then we can all carry on playing football in a safe, controlled environment.
Well, no one in football has died from coronavirus, have they?
Well, there you go. So that would be my. I'm sure this is going to get edited. But would be my sort of fix. I would stop testing coaches, players, physios.
Can we extend this? Can we extend this to the whole country, Luke?
Well, I just want to.
Zero positive cases return, and there'd be no fixtures postponed. Okay, and I like I'd almost guarantee that no professional footballers would die from coronavirus as well.
Well,
that's my pledge to you.
Thank you, mate.
Of the FA.
It's interesting because I've just had a breaking news from Fancast Towers. We're doing a best of Luke Thompson show for when he leaves after this podcast. So have a listen to that when you can. No, but like purely from a prediction, purely from a predictions point of view.
That's all right on Arrow.
do we think they'll end up being a pause in the league?
I mean, there will be because this thing's completely out of control again. But as long as it is only 2 weeks, we don't want no bollocks like last time where it's going to be a while and then it ends up just being months on end. Give it 3 weeks just to be double sure. But if you want to keep all players and staff in a bubble, 3 weeks, fine. But the overall thing is saying about duty of care. For some people, this is all they literally have is watching football.
Tell them again.
And especially if we are going to be in fucking tier 5 or whatever nonsense come next week, then some people need something to cling to. And it's not being hyperbolic and it's not being all tin hat and everything. Football for a lot of people is the only thing that's going to get them through this nonsense winter again. Mm-hmm. And duty of care is all well and good, but like we've said, that it's not really a problem for the vast majority of people. I know this is getting into dirty territory again, but personally, if they want to say 3 weeks, 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Don't make it any longer than that, because it's going to have a worse effect on certain people. Like we've said, like you said in the mental health podcast, people need something to cling to and people need things a constant in their life. And if you take football away from them, as well as the ability to go out fucking outside, then you're teetering on a dangerous ground. So for me, 3 weeks maximum.
I mean, you have some people who don't really understand, you know, maybe non-football fans say, why is football so special that like it gets to carry on in the pandemic? And then the answer to that is kind of what Stu said there, the fact that it's something that brings a large percentage of the country together, and it's something which people look forward to. I mean, us on this call now, when football stopped, that was a massive thing to take away from us. What are we looking forward to then? Another night in with the missus and the kids at home. Brilliant. Couldn't wait for that. Whereas like, you know, we need something to talk about, something to look forward to. I mean, conscious this isn't just a Premier League issue. I think Sunderland have had something like 3 straight games that have been called off now for COVID. And so it's affecting the lower leagues now. So, you know, maybe, you know, what has been said has been right. Maybe we do need this 2 week, what do we call it? Circuit breaker again. Yeah. Mm. But then, you know, as we're finding out right now, lockdowns aren't working anyway. So is that even the right answer anyway? I don't know. But
we're not here to talk about necessarily what measures are working, what measures are. But I think it's interesting that, you know, I think we're all unanimous in what we're saying, that people need football as a release from what goes on in the dredge of day to day life, especially for what's going on. So hopefully that can continue as long as people remain safe. And I think that's all anybody can really hope for.
But also on this, if we were to take a 2 or 3 week break, right, do you honestly trust the people in charge of the FA and the Premier League to then schedule the games after this 2 or 3 week break? Mm. Because don't forget, you can't just extend the season because we've got the Euros this year, which will go ahead, because there's no way UEFA are going to cancel it for a fucking second year on the spin with all the money they'd be losing, because we know they all can't live without their fucking backhanders and all the money that the sponsorship brings in.
Yeah, we're going. Let's get it.
Let's not forget, Luke, if you have a 3 week lockdown, the likes of Jack Grealish should just go out partying every night for 3 weeks.
Exactly. And he's already fucking on licence, probably. But these guys at the FA and the Premier League can't even schedule the Villa, Man City, Man United and is it Sheffield United game from the first game of the season. Yet they want to organise a 2-week break to then schedule it. Come on. They ain't got the fucking nerves to deal with it in the first place.
The only problem you're going to have is you're going to end up with the same thing as we are now. And everyone moans about Christmas all the time. You're going to end up with 3 weeks spread over the next 3 months where you're going to have 3 weeks of absolute chaos and you're playing three games.
Exactly. Well,
you're playing four games in 12 days. That's what it's going to be. But I think it's going to be more of a case of football seeming to do something rather than actually making any.
Let's just take a step back for a second, right? The coronavirus has been in the UK that we've known about for 9 months, since March. 9 months, yeah?
Officially.
So, how many footballers have died from coronavirus? No, seriously, I'm going to be serious now. How many footballers have died from coronavirus?
Zero.
That would indicate to me that they're running it in quite a safe environment where they're able to continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no debate about that. Football and pubs are the safest thing possible, and they took pubs away from us because it was all our fault. And we went to pubs all the time, and we didn't get ill, did we? And there was no problems there. But I think football, as a way of showing that it's doing something, even if it's not to circuit breaker or fire break like the Welsh did. If it's just it's symbolic more than anything else, I think that's what they're trying to do.
There's more cases of coronavirus in Asda and Tesco than there is in the Premier League. So let's take a 2-week circuit break from Asda and Tesco. Why can't my employer be seen to doing something? You know what I mean? You can't just blame it all on the Premier League. It's a bigger picture than the Premier League. The Premier League going on a break for 2 weeks is not going to get rid of this virus. It's not even going to cause a dent into the number of cases that are being reported positive. Bollocks.
Well, football bears the brunt of all sort of political stuff, doesn't it? It's like, it's an endless cycle, isn't it?
You're talking about Tesco, though. I mean, the Tesco banks have already started their midweek break, haven't they?
Absolutely. I'd love to be a fly on the wall on their Fancast equivalent groups. But we're going to call time on that now. We move on to Twitter Corner and answer some of the questions that we have from the Twitter. Would help if I've loaded this ahead of time. Right, here we go. So a question from we've had two really. I'm guessing these two people don't know each other, but Todd DeWitt, friend of the show, and Vinny WWFC. Want to know too, is a cheesecake a cake or is it a pie? And is the moon really made out of cheddar cheese? Cheesecake, is it a cake or a pie? It's a cake, isn't it? Cheesecake?
Who's in the name?
I'm not sure how you could classify it as a pie, to be honest. It doesn't have a crust case near the top, so no.
Is this Todd being American again, though?
I don't know, because you've got like key lime pie, haven't you?
Calling pizzas a pizza pie. Is this going to be one of these like weird things?
Yeah, that's a take.
And the moon made out of cheddar cheese? I mean, a silly question. We all know it is. So there we go.
Well, I'll be damned if it is.
Very nice.
Sorry.
So Fraser Evans wants to know, Diego Costa, Luka Jovic, is that right? Or Divock Origi, who are we signing? He would say Giroud as well, but Chelsea wouldn't let him go, and Giroud would be my absolute number one pick if it was a four out of them anyway. Out of them, who are we signing if we could?
Jovic for me. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, Costa's, however much of a bastard he is, that comes with his style of play, doesn't it? I know he's supposed to be a bit of a joker and a bit of a lad about town, but do we really want? We've never signed that kind of player. And anyone who was even remotely troubled with like Catrone, it was sent back straight away. So it'll be someone who fits the mould, and Jovic fits the mould out of them three.
I don't know enough on Jovic, if I'm completely honest. I know that he struggled at Madrid, but it does make me laugh sometimes when I see like Diego Costa and everyone's like, get him in. And like, well, I think people want him just in for the banter, don't they? The same reason they want Balotelli in. They just want him letting off fireworks every night over Tettenal or into people's bathrooms and stuff. It's not actually what he'll bring to the pitch. I can guarantee you that if everyone would be like having parties, if we were to sign Diego Costa and three games in when he's got booked every game and got sent off and there's offered absolutely fuck all on the pitch, they'll all be slagging him off. So it's a no for me in regards to Costa. Only because I'm tired of people saying, oh yeah, it'd be great if you get it, it'd be great we were getting him in because he'll be a bastard. Doesn't really help us, that does it?
Interesting. Another question here. Rob Cartwright wants to know, was this the best defeat of the season so far? A strange but kind of interesting question.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the other ones like Burnley, where I turned it off after 75 minutes to watch Gremlins. I'd absolutely had enough. And it doesn't feel like a defeat. I think that's the clues there.
Mm-hmm.
At least the performance was really, really good. And we were unlucky in the end.
Yeah,
with a weird deflection. So it's absolutely the best defeat of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Luke, I'm saving a question for you specifically because we don't ever already have enough clips from this episode to be able to use on the socials. So, Ad, I want to ask you. Steve Mogg 72 wants to know, what will be the date when Jeff Shee is standing on the pitch with a new signing in January? You can go from the 1st to the 31st, obviously.
I am going to say, I reckon he's going to time it with my birthday. So I'm going to say the 19th of Jan. He's going to be there on the Molineux pitch with Yannick Sagbo with his shirt.
Unreal. The stuff of dreams. And finally, Luke, this is one is just purely for you. Up the Wolves, at All Wolves, Amy wants to know, why are United fans such twats?
Do you know what it is? It's because I don't actually know about football, right? Man United fans that actually come from Manchester, I can accept and appreciate. But a Man U fan, any of you, all right, I'm going to throw this question back to you three. If you're talking to somebody who was born and bred in Bilston or Dudley or Codsall and supports Man U, and you get into a conversation about football, do you take what he talks about seriously?
I don't give what they say as much credence as somebody that supports a local club. No, I'll be honest about that.
And I think that is the answer to that question.
They'll probably say, oh, but my dad was a lifelong United fan and he bought me
up. Pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. And do you know what I love, though? Don't get me wrong, Man United, when we was growing up and we was at school, was by far the best team in the fucking country, maybe the world. No argument about it. And that's why everyone supported them. So don't come with your bullshit that you fucking your dad's auntie's dog was born in Manchester. Just accept the fact that you chose to support a club that was absolutely fantastic, and now you're sort of getting wound up by Wolves fans because you're not that much better than us anymore.
And on that note, we will end the podcast for tonight. So thank you everybody for listening. We are churning out more content than we know what to do with at the minute. There's loads out there at the minute, including the YouTube channel, which you haven't already subscribed to. Please do, and tick the little bell for notifications of videos, because we've put some really, really good content out there, including GTA Fancast, which is like a tactical view of the game in a surprising amount of depth for what is a fan-led show. We're going to be putting like clips from podcasts on there and a lot of exciting content on there as well. And we've got a lot in our back catalogue as well, including a mental health episode that Stuart mentioned earlier, film cast, stories from the pack. There's loads out there to keep you, from your lockdown blues. There's going to be more mental health episodes coming soon as well. And one major, Luke, I want to just give you a chance to just, we did a podcast very, very recently about race. And I know it's a cause very close to your heart. I think everybody talks about obviously tremendous courage in a subject of that nature. How do you feel now it's gone out? Is it something that, that we're going to be driving conversation? Are you got any plans to do any more episodes on this going forward?
Yeah, do you know what? The feedback was absolutely amazing. I don't usually get worried about what comes out of my mouth. But after that one...
No, really?
But after that one, I was actually quite nervous as to what the feedback would be, and the feedback's been amazing. So, we're definitely going to do some more. So just watch this space, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Right then, guys. if we look forward to the Brighton game, and we will get our podcast out straight after that as well. But for now, Ad.
Adios.
Stu.
Happy New Year.
Luke.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, everybody. Stay safe and look after yourselves.